There are more than 8,000 people homeless in King County each night, about 2,600 in Pierce County, 2,700 in Snohomish. Those are rounded off numbers. Many groups, government, non-government, have pledged to end homelessness by 2016. The state is spending more money. Even the federal government has pledged money. Federal assistance was $29 billion in 2001 for housing. It is $31 billion today. But the government's housing stock is not keeping pace. The market is removing low-cost housing. People are homeless. And 2016, the year of that pledge to end homeless through more housing, more support services, that seems far off. Imagine yourself exhausted. It's been a long day. When you get home from work, you throw off your shoes. You settle into the couch. Already you feel a bit of peace. Now imagine yourself at the end of that same day, but you're homeless. You still haven't found a job. There's still no couch or roof. In our studios, Neil Lampe is currently living in a transitional housing program coordinated by Seattle First Presbyterian Church. He's in recovery and has been, as he says, intermittently homeless over the years. Joins us in our studios. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Also in our studios is Renee Gabre, currently living at Seattle Union Gospel Missions Women and Children's Shelter. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
So, you know, as I was saying before we started, that we're talking about your lives being homeless, but the label that comes with that is a label with baggage. So you're not just Neil Lampe, homeless person. So where did you come from? Originally, you said you came from Cleveland?
I was born and raised in Cleveland, Ohio. I've lived various places around the country. I've been in Seattle since 2004.
Yeah, what'd you do in Cleveland before you left?
I was 18 when I left.
You're 18 when you left?
Yeah, I've worked in warehouses, shipping, driving jobs. I worked with the homeless, actually, in California for 9 years. I worked in transitional housing settings, and I worked at a family shelter.
Because you told me because social services has been your interest.
Yes. I attended community college for a couple of years in Sacramento. I didn't finish my degree. I had a job that I thought was going to land me on Easy Street, but, of course, things change.
What happened to take you off of Easy Street, as you put it?
Well, in 2000, my mother, my brother, and my sister died within the span of a year, and I was just kind of walking around numb. I had no ability to be present for other people. I was barely present for myself. So,
by the way, it says you're in recovery from?
Drugs and alcohol. I've been clean and sober for 23 years.
And you still put it that way, in recovery, huh?
When you're green, you're growing, and when you're ripe, you're rotten.
All right, so where do you live today?
I live at the Seattle First Presbyterian Church, where I work as a shelter supervisor, and I also work outside the church.
What do you do outside the church?
I work in a housing program for formerly homeless people.
Oh, so this is your life.
This is my life. I'm ruined to a life of self-interest.
Describe your house where you live. Describe that traditional, is it a room in the church?
Well,
is it
right now, it'll be a two-bedroom apartment shared with another individual. But right now, there's a couple of dormitories, and there's room for six guys in the New Life community.
So excited? Not excited? Seems like one more transitional step for you?
One more transitional step.
Yeah. All right. Renee Gabre, where are you from?
I'm from Seattle.
And how long have you been? What did you do? What do you do?
I was born and raised here. I've had numerous different jobs.
For example?
I worked front desk clerk, housekeeping, hotel work, mostly restaurant. I have two kids that were in foster care for a year and a half. They're back now. But I stay at the Women and Children's Shelter at the Union Gospel Mission.
Describe that. So you have two kids, so they're with you in that shelter.
Right.
So and what's that? What are you living in? And how many rooms? That sort of thing.
What it is, it's like an old hotel. Like the moms with one children or single women get one room. When I first got there, I had one room. It consisted of a bed, sink, dresser, closet. And that was it. When my kids came in March 9th, I got a double room, which was two rooms together. So we have room for four people to sleep if I had another kid, because we have trundle beds they pull out. The shelter, it provides us three meals a day. I take numerous classes. I do 9 classes a week. I do internship at the front desk. I do 6 hours of the Learning Education Center, which they have computers and they assess us and see what levels we're on and what jobs we'll be able to apply for in the future. And if we need more assessing or learning for the goal that we want to reach, they can give it to us.
What's yours?
Pediatric nursing.
And where do you stand now in terms of the educational ladder?
Well, I've graduated from high school, but I'm getting ready to take a 10-week course for a certified nurse's aide, so I can at least get my foot in the door and have some kind of experience before I go for that RN or LPN.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of the where you live now, what's the next step for that? What's your plan?
Well, it's they have their own transitional apartments too, which is called Sunrise House. And the program, you can stay a total of 4 years between the mission and the transitional housing Sunrise. They have different phases. I'm in third phase, so I'm just an Oaks program. After I graduate from there, if I want to stay, I can go through the teen program, which will be another year, and then I can graduate to the Oaks program, which could be a 2-year stay there at the specific shelter.
How do you feel about the stability of the program you're in? Does it feel like you're on a path?
Yes, very much so. Very much so.
And the services are there to help you negotiate?
Yes. They help us. They have everything from free dental care to free credit consolidation, everything. It's a really awesome program.
Renee Gabre. And Lisa Gray Garcia was raised in a homeless family. She's a journalist, poet, community activist, now founder of Poor Magazine and the Poor News Network out of San Francisco, right? Oakland.
Oakland, yeah.
Her book is titled Criminal of Poverty, Growing Up Homeless in America, a.k.a. Tiny. Do you still go by that?
Yeah. You want to know why?
Yeah.
Well, it sort of is a little slice of why even the book is there, because as houseless folks, arguably as poor people in the U.S. and especially poor people of color, it's a criminalized space to be poor in this country, specifically to be homeless. And when I was dealing with what I call underground economic strategies or crimes of poverty, I couldn't use my real name, especially when I started writing. So I had to use a pseudonym. But also, even before that, that was one of the ways that I was able to get by.
I noticed in your book there was even allusions to activities that you said, but I will leave those undescribed so that other people don't have their chances ruined. Dance around the edge of what you're talking about.
Well, first of all, to go backwards, at age 11, my mom, who was a poor single woman of color who was raised in orphanages from the north side of Philadelphia, was basically a torture victim from her past, her poverty. But she struggled to get a degree and come up and out of her poverty, which a lot of poor folks do. And she raised me.
A torture victim by her? By
orphanages and foster homes that she was in as a child.
She was physically abused.
Yeah, yeah.
And mentally abused.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. And sexually and a lot of other things, which I could get into. And she also was the daughter of a poor woman, which is, you know, one of the things the book is about is also the roots of poverty and racism in the U.S. and in general, specifically for poor mothers and poor women, and how that actually plays out. Because my grandmother was an immigrant and a battered woman, so then she wasn't able to raise her own daughter because there wasn't even the little bit of nothing that they give you now for welfare. And there was no domestic violence shelters. But anyway, so my mom got her degree, and she, you know, struggled to get it, and she actually got a college degree and got a job and held it together and raised me the best that she could. And I would, you know, I always call out my mama D, because without her there would be no me. She passed a year ago, so I'm still dealing with that. But the point being is that when I was 11, she lost her job that she worked so hard to get and that she had struggled so long to finally come up that sort of midpoint on that little ladder. And that little murder of the soul, as she used to call it, the loss of that job and what it meant, because we were already tenuous and quote-unquote at risk, just was sort of the final straw that broke her back, and she was unable. She became disabled, psychologically disabled, unable, and I became her sole caregiver at that point. And from that moment on, in the whole, you know, mythos or cliche of one paycheck away from homelessness, that was our reality. We became, at that point, outside, you know, basically going between different survival strategies and living in our car and living outside and living maybe in places that we'd squatted for periods of time. But it was from then on, it was impossible. And so to survive, we did different things. In that case, it was illegal street vending because that's all I could do. I had to drop out of school in the sixth grade to work to support my family.
Art, right?
Huh?
You did
art,
right?
I did.
Lisa Gray Garcia, a.k.a. Tiny, was raised in a homeless family. She's a poet, journalist, community activist, founder of Poor Magazine and the Poor News Network. She's written a book, Criminal of Poverty, Growing Up Homeless in America. Neil Lampe is currently living in traditional housing program coordinated by Seattle First Presbyterian Church. He is working in the social service industry. Renee Gabre is currently living at the Seattle Union Gospel Missions Women and Children's Shelter. She's working towards becoming a pediatric nurse. By the way, where do you live now, Lisa Gray Garcia? Get all the hyphens in there.
Yeah, there you go. In a thing called Mama House, which I started as a collective for low-income single mamas because, you know, like I'm sure Renee understands, the position of poor mamas is one that is frightening and difficult and challenging. It's challenging to be a parent at all. To be a parent dealing with homelessness is really insane. And so I actually ended up back in the rabbit hole again because Poor ran out of all our funding and all of these things. And so when I had my son, I ended up homeless again. And coming out of that, I realized I needed to realize some of these visions. And one of them was to have a place where other mothers could support each other.
Your work, Poor's, and your writing, and as you said, that there's a that this is criminalized and politicized homelessness. So let's kick that around a little bit. How do you see it, Renee? How do you see your status? Do you find yourself feeling marginalized? Well, marginalized, criminalized, your activities?
Sometimes. I know when I was living on the streets, I was. I mean, I did things that I had to do to survive out there. And a lot of them are criminalized things. You know, anywhere from selling drugs to stealing.
And did you feel forced into that?
Yes.
Well, I'm trying to get to where it becomes criminal and where you feel like the social powers have pushed you there. I mean, does everybody who's homeless end up having to feel criminalized at some point, do you think?
Yeah. For me, it was, it just depended on, there was days that I could go places and take showers and things like that, and I could panhandle and ask for money. And if my appearance was proper, I seemed to get more help. But if there was days that I couldn't get in to take a shower or change my clothes or something, it was like they treated me like a criminal, you know. And it's what I call do or die. It's either you do what you have to do, or you're not gonna make it out there.
Did you follow those same routes, or did your route take you different places, Neil?
Well, places like the Compass Center, the Urban Rest Stop, and Kay Abbey's Lord's Table Dinner, served four nights a week downtown, were just lifesavers. Without those things, I wouldn't have survived. And you're criminalized by the aspect of everywhere you go, you're told to move on. You can't sit here. You two can't talk here.
Yeah.
You just need to move on. And as at the shelter, I know that we do an extra job of trying to welcome the guys and make them feel comfortable and part of a family, sort of, as best we can. I know we can't accomplish that, but it's one place where they're not going to be asked to move on, or they're not going to be told they have to do this or they have to do that in order to have a place to stay.
Poverty criminalized in America?
I would say yes.
That's what you're saying as well.
I slept in my car and I was harassed on a number of occasions for, you know, what are you doing here? You know,
somebody's knocking on your right, window at 3 o'clock in the morning, huh?
Can I just add to that that I also bring a class and race analysis to that criminalization, because, you know, those of us who've been sleeping in our car, sleeping on the street, know that we're going to be either arrested, cited, even put in jail, as I was for those crimes, right? If you've got $3,000 worth of, you know, camping equipment and you go to Yosemite, nobody's giving a citation for camping. If you're sleeping in a park and you're houseless with all your stuff, you are giving a camping citation. If you are in your car sleeping and you happen to have what we call a hoopty and have a driving while, you know, poor DWP or driving while black or brown citation given
hoopty
to you. Broke down car, broken taillight, registration, the poor people car that we often have to drive, whatever. Oopsie, which is in my case, that was it. That was our home for many occasions. But anyway, but if you have a new shiny RV and you're traveling across country, nobody's giving you a citation for sleeping in your vehicle.
You ended up in jail at one point, and it had to do with parking tickets, right?
Yeah, it was sleeping in our vehicle citations. And
they accumulated.
There was nothing I could do about them. I went in to try to deal with them, and they gave me 2,700 hours of community service. How am I going to, anybody going to do 2,700 hours of anything for free, number one? But when I also had to survive every day by working, or we wouldn't eat, you know, how was I going to do that? So that went nowhere, and I ended up getting thrown in jail.
You were both nodding your head, so something similar happened to you, or that sounds familiar to you, right?
Yeah, I've slept in my car several times, and like you said, 3 o'clock in the morning, here come the police. You have to wake up, you have to move, and try to find somewhere else to park and sleep. You know, they give you a ticket for loitering or parking in a metered zone. I mean, we don't even have money to put in the meter, let alone feed ourselves.
And you were nodding your head too, Neil. Something similar happened to you?
Well, the only place I could find that was acceptable for the police for me to park was an incredibly dangerous area of the I-99 viaduct. It's okay to go there because nobody will know you're there because nobody goes there.
So let me ask you, because it's about poverty, yes?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the activists I was reading this morning, talking about the billions being promised and the millions being spent, all turn in the end to saying, "Look, it's not that complicated an issue. This is about being poor." You agree with that? Do you see it in fundamentally? Is that where we end up here?
I was reading in the McClatchy newspaper the other day that from 2000 to 2006, poverty has risen at a rate of 26%.
Yeah.
That's 56% faster than the rate of population growth. Something's wrong.
Yeah.
You're agreeing with that? You're saying that?
Oh, yeah. It's almost the ratio of people in severe poverty is hovering now at 50% across the country. That just came out from the census study about a month ago. It's very seriously, a split, and the split is getting wider. And yes, it is about poverty at its core, and it's also about the fact that even in these quote unquote, you know, supposedly funded programs that come through federal government, or what we call poverty pimps down in the Bay Area.
Who are you calling poverty pimps?
Well, I don't want to call organizations by name. I know a lot of
Are you
of
talking about NGOs? Are you talking about government programs?
Some NGOs, also what we call big poverty pimps, the nonprofit way, like Salvation Army, Goodwill, those folk who will take millions of dollars because they have the staff and the administration to process all that crazy paperwork. And what they'll build with it is shelters, which don't even do the stuff that his organization is doing or that your wonderful organization is doing. They don't do wraparound care and real permanent solutions. They just do in and out, like it's like a friendly jail. And that is not a solution to poverty. Solution to poverty and homelessness is actual real solutions.
Is the money there in the system now?
Oh, yeah.
So it's the money's
totally
there. It's being siphoned off.
Well,
the bureaucracy.
No, definitely. There's two things I want to be real. The Western Regional Advocacy Project, which I'm sure some of you know about, came out through the Bay Area and is a national study just came out. The housing budget was cut almost by 50% or some crazy amount in the last 10 years. So, yes, there has been severe cuts to permanent housing. But now, as we talk about these 10-year plans and these other things.
9-year plans now.
Yeah, exactly. Where are those dollars going? and how are they actually supporting real solutions? We're not even in our project at POUR, we're talking about a thing called the Homefulness Project, which actually gives, it's a sweat equity housing project that gives actual equity to houseless and formerly houseless families. What's the difference between homeless folks and not homeless folks? We're not a tribe that walked the earth. We didn't raise that way. We just need some equity, right? That's real solutions. And wraparound services like these folks are involved in. Excellent.
Lisa Gray Garcia, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Neil Lampe is a poverty scholar and working on social work programs. Well, thank you very much. Full-time student. And Renee Gabre is a student working towards pediatric nurse. Thank you very much.
Thank you.